Welcome to The Ralph Report with Ralph Garman.
Hey there, boys and girls. It's your old pal Ralph here. Welcome to a Friday. We did it. We made it to the end of another week. It is Friday, the 16th of February. Thanks so much for joining me here on The Ralph Report. It's been one of those weeks. I got to tell you, today was supposed to be the day. And we try to, at least we're going to try to every Friday to try to do a new couples adventure, my wife and I. And so today, you may remember, I mentioned it earlier in the week, we were going to be focusing on my first ever yoga class. My wife was going to take me to her yoga teacher and they were going to put me through the paces so I could learn what my wife goes through when she goes to yoga. And we did it. We had the class and Kimberly was the teacher and she was lovely. And as expected, I was hopeless and I cramped up on several occasions and I fell over and I made horrible, inhuman grunting sounds. And it was, I thought, very entertaining. So anyway, last night I go to edit that segment together to put in today's show. And here's the thing. I am not a audio technician by any stretch of the imagination. But now with the advent of the Ralph Report, my new normal is that I record all the sound and I edit the sound and I lay down music and I add the sounders and I put together a show that I like. I do it my way. So all of that entails a certain amount of technical skill to which there is a learning curve. And so last night I went to edit the yoga class segment with my wife and I, and the audio file, well, something had happened. I like to think black magic, because I'm technical that way. I think it was something occult, probably some sort of demonic possession. But whatever it was, the audio, it sounded like it was coming from the bowels of hell. It was something out of The Exorcist. Something had gone horribly wrong. And it was unusable. And so we missed out on that. And I apologize. So there will be no couples adventure today, much to my sadness and to yours. And really, we're all better off. You didn't need to hear me grunting and sweating, doing downward dog. And here's the thing. I am not flexible. I am made of sturdy peasant stock. But I have very short hamstrings. And my joints are not the most bendy. This woman was putting me in positions that my legs had never been in the history of my body. So it was enormously uncomfortable. And I think I may have cursed at her once or twice. I had to apologize afterwards. But sadly, that is lost to the ages. However, we are going to do a fun one next week, I think. As a gag, I'm going to save it for next week. We'll talk about it next week. But I think next week's going to be fun. So I'm going to leave you in the dark until next week when my wife and I go on another couple's adventure. In the meantime, what do you say we take a look at the showbiz news, huh? Jennifer Aniston and her husband Justin Theroux have split, but wait for it, lovingly, after 2 years of marriage. Well, you can't say they didn't give it a shot. 2 whole years. They've been together 7 as a couple. Here is the statement. In an effort to reduce any further speculation, we have decided to announce our separation. This decision was mutual and lovingly made at the end of last year. We are 2 best friends who have decided to part ways as a couple, but look forward to continuing our cherished friendship. Why is it celebrities always end every relationship with love and cherished friendship and being the best of friends, whereas the rest of the entire fucking world at the end of relationship, everybody hates each other and wants to scratch each other's eyes out? Do they really think we're that stupid that we believe it's all conscious uncoupling and everything is loving and we're all the best friends, that there's no shitty feelings towards each other at all at the end of this 2-year marriage? It was so fucking wonderful. If you're best friends and it's loving, you wouldn't be getting a divorce. There's no need to divorce somebody you love and who's your best friend. However, this does give credence to my long-held theory that is Jennifer Aniston is just a nightmare. I get the sense, I don't know why, it's just a vibe I pick up off of her, but I get the sense that she is just a nightmare to be with. And that's why Brad ran off with Angelina, and that's why this Justin Theroux wants to lovingly get the fuck away from her, because I'm telling you, there's something about her. I got a pretty good radar when it comes to this, and she is a nightmare. Well, it's official. Jeffrey Tambor is officially leaving the show Transparent over there at Amazon. I don't know if you heard about this or not, but he was accused of sexually harassing two different trans women on the set. One was a woman named Van Barnes, who was a former personal assistant to him, and the other was a guest star, actress on that show, Trace Lissette, also said there was inappropriate behavior going on. And so there was a big investigation, and Amazon looked into it, and it looks like he will not be part of the series as it comes up to its fifth season. Amazon confirmed his exit, but declined to comment any further. Here's what Jeffrey Tambor had to say about it. I am profoundly disappointed in Amazon's handling of these false accusations against me. I'm even more disappointed in Jill Soloway, she is the creator of the show, in Jill Soloway's unfair characterization of me as someone who would ever cause harm to any of my fellow castmates. He goes on to say other stuff, including, therefore, I can only surmise that the investigation against me was deeply flawed and biased toward the toxic, politicized atmosphere that afflicted our set. What does he mean by that? Is there some conservative versus liberal battle going on in the set there? Anyway, this is a bad break for Tambor, because this was a show that was very good to him. He won two Emmys and a Golden Globe for his work on the series, in which he plays Maura Pfefferman, a trans woman and parent to three grown children, and it was touted as his best work, and now he's got to move on. Look, I know that a lot of guys are losing their job because of this shit, and I'm afraid that shit is just coming home to roost now. I mean, men have behaved like awful fuck pigs for a long time now, and the pendulum is swinging back, and shit's going to get tough. And you better watch your ass. And, okay, I say, all right. I mean, they got away with a lot of shit for a long time. And maybe some guys, unfortunately, are going to get caught up in the groundswell of the correction, the course correction for this problem. But I'm okay with that, because this needs to get done. This shit needs to stop. In happier news, Kat Dennings got a new gig. Now that she is finally free from that show, Two Broke Girls on CBS. That show was on for 6 seasons. Can anyone tell me how? That was nuts. It looked like a sitcom, and it smelled like a sitcom, and it sounded like a sitcom, but I never heard any jokes on that show. Anyway, I like Kat Dennings a lot. I think she's a very talented lady, and she has got a new gig. It's going to be for ABC. It's going to be a single-camera sitcom, and it's based on the book and blog How May We Hate You, which is based on people who get frustrated in the service industry dealing with rich people who are assholes. So I think there's a lot of potential in this. It's just a pilot. No word on whether it'll be a series or not. But I'm happy to see Kat Dennings working again, hopefully in some material that is worth her talent. This made me happy. I don't know whether you saw this or not, but YouTube's Red Channel is bringing back one of the classic battles of good versus evil ever. They are rebooting the legendary rivalry between Johnny and Danny from The Karate Kid. Johnny Lawrence and Daniel LaRusso going back up against each other again in the new series Cobra Kai, which of course was the name of the evil dojo in the Karate Kid movie. I can't believe they're rebooting this with the original guys, but I'm all for it. Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka will be back again together. And apparently Billy Zabka plays Johnny Lawrence, who kind of brings the Cobra Kai dojo back to life, and Ralph Macchio's got to step in, and he's got to wax on and wax off. And of course, at this point, he's waxing a walker. But still, I want to see these guys and see what they do. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a little nostalgic romp, and we're all going to have a good time. I will anyway. Speaking of nostalgia and throwbacks, I was talking earlier this week about Kung Fury, the short film that I love, which is basically a spoof of those awful action films from the 80s. And now the joke about 80s bad action films has tapped into an actual joke from 80s bad action films. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be a part of the film. He is great. I mean, he has a very good sense of humor about himself, obviously. I mentioned that Michael Fassbender was going to be in the film. David Hasselhoff's already locked in. And now Schwarzenegger apparently will play the President of the United States in Kung Fury, and that casting is perfect, by the way. Yeah, Kung Fury, we're counting on you to fight Hitler as he comes, you know, to fight, get the ultimate weapon. Come on, that movie just got 100 times better. Schwarzenegger is the president. Really, at this point, let's rescind whatever that law is in the Constitution that says you have to be naturally born in the United States to be the president, and let's just go for it. Make Schwarzenegger president. What do we have to lose at this point, people? Seriously. You think it's going to damage our standing with the rest of the world? Couldn't be any worse. Case in point, NBC making a shit ton of money off of the ratings for the Winter Olympics there in South Korea, right? NBC refuses to say the name of the city where the games are being held correctly. Refuses. They have the correct answer. They know how it's supposed to be properly pronounced. But they have announced that they're choosing consciously to say it incorrectly. Why? Because they believe, according to a spokesperson for NBC Sports, the mispronunciation sounds cleaner. They like the way it sounds better. So the people at NBC have been saying the name incorrectly the whole time. They've been saying Pyeongchang. And the first time I talked to Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports about these Winter Games, the first time, I said Pyeongchang, am I saying that correctly? And he said no. He corrected me. It's Pyeongchang. And I've been saying that way ever since. NBC knows it's Pyeongchang, but they're choosing to say Pyeongchang because they think it sounds better. Fuck you and your culture. We're going to do what we want to do because we are the sloppy, ugly, lazy Americans. It's gotten so bad that the Asian American Journalist Association had to step in and release a video trying to correct the problem. Here's the video.
I'm Stefan Kim, Media Watch co-chair at the Asian American Journalist Association. We've been getting a lot of questions from American journalists about the correct pronunciation of the Olympic host city. So here is AAJA's guidance. The correct pronunciation is Pyeongchang. Chang, ah, ah, like when you go see your doctor, ah. Pyeongchang, Pyeongchang, Pyeongchang.
And NBC said, nah, Pyeongchang sounds cleaner. Can you imagine if the Olympic Games were held in Chicago and foreign reporters kept calling it Chicago? Today we are in Chicago to look at Winter Games. Americans would lose their shit. Ugh, son of a bitch. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. All these stars born on this day, February 16th, Jeremy Bullock. You may not know the name, but you know his character. Played a bounty hunter by the name of Boba Fett in a movie called The Empire Strikes Back. He is 73 years old today. William Catt, we were just talking about the reboot of Greatest American Hero. The OG, G-A-H, as he's known, is 67 years old today. Singer James Ingram is 66. LeVar Burton, Kunta Kinte. And also Lieutenant Georgie LaForge. And from the host of Reading Rainbow, take a look, it's in a book, Reading Rainbow, 61 years old today. Ice-T is 60. Lisa Loring played Wednesday Addams on The Addams Family, 60 years old today. Andy Taylor from Duran Duran is 57. Taylor Hawkins, drummer of Foo Fighters, is 46. And Elizabeth Olsen, the Scarlet Witch, 26 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman, I walk the showbiz beat. Since it's a Friday and we're heading into a long weekend, I wanted to send everybody out with a smile. Everybody's off on Monday, three-day weekend coming up, including me here at The Ralph Report, by the way. No new The Ralph Report on Monday. I will be spending the long weekend away with my family, but I wanted to give everybody a smile to start off the weekend. And that's why we bring in our UK correspondent, Mr. Steve Ashton. Mr. Ashton, always a pleasure to hear from you, sir.
Oh, Mr. Garman, it's always a pleasure to speak to you too. I've got a couple of stories for you. I'm in a bit of a rush. Can I go through them?
Yeah, what's going on in the world?
All right, so you know that feeling, right, when you post something on social media and then instantly regret it?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, well, that happened to One Direction's Liam Payne last week. Liam, you may know, is married to former girl group singer Cheryl Tweedy, who was part of a low-rent Spice Girls knockoff called Girls Aloud. Now, she was, you may also remember her from a failed stint on X Factor, when no one could understand her awful Geordie accent.
Right.
Yeah, she was the one who sounded like she had a stroke, right? So it's like, that rendition was stunning, Pet. You're a right canny singer. So anyway, Liam shared a photo of himself on Instagram soaking up the atmosphere on board a private jet whilst flipping the bird at the camera. Now, he captioned the picture, "You only get jet lag from a jet. The rest of y'all..." Oh, and by the way, he should be publicly flogged for saying y'all, just for starters. The rest of y'all have got plane lag. Hashtag no fucks. Ralph, he went full Bieber. You never go full Bieber.
That's true.
Liam's currently gearing up for the release of his debut solo albums. Let's hope his fans give hashtag no fucks after that display of massive douchebaggery. So what else? All right, yo, yeah, this is a big story. David Beckham and James Corden and Harry Styles are among the celebrities to make the shortlist for this year's British LGBT Awards. No, they haven't all come out. But the awards celebrate the campaigners, community activists and straight allies who've done something to advance the fight for LGBT rights during the past 12 months. Now, the winners will be announced at a ceremony in London on the 11th of May. And among the nominees for Celebrity Straight Ally are Ariana Grande, David Beckham, Harry Styles, and James Corden. I wonder how you get nominated for Straight Ally. I mean, you know, are they giving out free handies to all comers? Are they, I don't know, good with curling tongs? Do they take in LGBT refugees? I have no idea. By the way, Ralph, why the fucking fuck has James Corden been nominated? What has he done for the LGBT community other than rolling on stage and doing a bit about transgender military ban last year on his shitty, shitty show? Opportunistic prick. But anyway, I'm not a fan. You may be able to pick that up.
Yes.
Other categories include media moment. There's a category for best destination, or as I like to think of it, most gay place. And one of the nominations is Palm Springs in the USA. Is there a big LGBT community there, Ralph?
Very much so. Yeah, that's a big vacation spot.
Right. Okay. So there's also charity and community initiative. Very good. Now, here's my main problem with this whole thing. The majority of categories are solely aimed at corporate shilling. So you've got brand or marketing campaign, corporate straight ally, diversity champion, right, whose nominees all from the business world, like, for example, Disney, which is obvious because Mickey's clearly gay. He's, you know, he's never banged Minnie. And I mean, come on, that voice. So there's LGBT inspirational leader, LGBT corporate rising star, LGBT network group, more corporate nominees, employer or company whose nominees include, get this, the British Army. Yes, Ralph, our army is fucking woke. So in summary, whilst it appears to be a good thing to promote diversity and acceptance, it's basically a big corporate beauty parade with companies trying to up their cred by getting the gays on the side. Well, that's how I see it anyway. All right, that's all I've got. Have a great weekend, Ralph. My best regards to all the Garmy and your wonderful family. I'll speak to you sometime next week.
Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you soon, Steve.
Hey, maybe you're going to go see a movie this long weekend. That's how you're going to celebrate. I know my kid and I, we're going to go see Peter Rabbit this weekend, and then Livy's going to do one of her movie reviews next week, let you know what she thought of it. But there are new movies in the Cineplexes this weekend, so I thought we'd take a look at the movie beat. There's another movie that looks good for kids this weekend. Early Man is the name of it. It's from Nick Park. Do you know Nick Park? He's a Brit who is responsible for some of my favorite claymation comedies. Wallace and Gromit was his. Chicken Run. Shaun the Sheep. So funny. So talented, and it's amazing how he makes pieces of clay come to life. He's done it again in this movie, Early Man. This is set at the dawn of time, when prehistoric creatures and woolly mammoths still roam the earth, and Early Man is about Doug. Doug is part of a tribe of rabbit hunters, and they are part of the Stone Age. And they find themselves being sort of pushed out of their comfort zone and their homes when the mighty Bronze Age comes to life. And it just looks so funny. Eddie Redmayne is the voice of Doug. Maisie Williams plays his love interest, Guna. And Tom Hiddleston is unrecognizable as Lord Nuth, who is the head of the Bronze Age. A very funny French accent. Here's a little clip from the trailer of Early Man.
The rabbits are fighting back! I don't think this is rabbits.
The Edge of Stone is over. Long live the Edge of Bronze.
What's bronze?
Sliced bread, wow. That's the best thing since, well, ever.
The Edge of Stone is over. The welcome the Edge of Bronze.
I love Nick Park. Can't wait to see this film. Absolutely going to check it out. See if I can get the kid to go with me. But yeah, I'm going to watch this. And then, of course, this is the weekend we've all been waiting for. Boy, does this movie look terrific. Black Panther in theaters everywhere. Chadwick Boseman stars as T'Challa, the Black Panther himself. He is the prince of an African nation, Wakanda. And now he's going to take over as king after his father has been murdered. You saw all that in the Captain America movie. And now Black Panther gets his own film. He's got to go up against Eric Killmonger, the bad guy in the story, Michael B. Jordan. Lupita Nyong'o also stars in this film. Andy Serkis is in it. Martin Freeman, a terrific cast. I have been waiting for this film for so long. The Black Panther, created, of course, by the amazing Stan Lee and the King Jack Kirby, the first really mainstream black hero in comics. This is a long time coming, this film, and it looks like they're really going to do it justice because Ryan Coogler's the director. This is the guy who did Creed. Boy, is this guy a talent, and this film looks amazing. I cannot wait to see it. Here's a little taste of Black Panther.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be. Don't freeze.
I never freeze.
The revolution will not be televised.
Ah, come on. Looks so good. You can't lose this weekend. Those are the two new movies in the Cineplexes. Either one looks like a good time with your popcorn. So it's very rare you can say either one of these new movies probably is going to be a good experience for you at the theaters. I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the movie beat. I have to give a special thanks to my buddy Chris Harrison for being my guest all week long. Here is the last installment of my interview with Chris, where we talk about his other gig. Of course, he is the host of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise and Bachelor Winter Games. But he also, in his spare time, is the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, one of the great game shows of all time. In this segment, we talk about how he brought that show back to life. And it's a terrific look behind the scenes of one of TV's most famous game shows. Here is the last highlight of my conversation with Chris Harrison.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Is that you having fun doing that?
I am now. Well, it's funny. I got a call. I was actually driving here in town.
That's one of the great game shows in history.
It is. If you look on the Mount Rushmore and you have like, what, five or six of these shows from Price is Right to Feud to Jeopardy, Wheel.
Because people forget there were no game shows on television for a long, long time until this kind of brought it back.
Those shows are legendary. Yeah. And when you get a call, and that's what it was. I got a call from, it was weird. I got a call from my agent and said, I'm going to call you in a minute, something about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'm like, well, why don't you just call me in a minute then? Why are you calling me to tell me you're calling me? But that's what agents do. So he called me and he's like, okay, what I couldn't tell you is they've let go Terry Crews or he's left Millionaire and they want you to host. Period. And I'm like, okay, but when is this? Yeah. Like, you shoot 175 episodes in June or July or whatever. I'm like, no can do. I'm out. Bachelor takes up all but like 10 weeks of my summer.
Right.
Now we go, from Bachelorette, I'm about to start here in March, and then you cruise through to end of May, and then 1st of June through the end of June, 1st of July, I'm doing Bachelor in Paradise. And then I have a little time off, and then I go do Miss America, and I get back into The Bachelor. And so I'm like, no, there's no way. And they're like, I don't really think they're asking. Like, ABC is saying, we're giving the show was on the outs. It wasn't doing well. I didn't realize how bad till I got into it, but he was on the outs. They're going to give it one more shot, and you are doing it. They want you to revive the show. And I'm like, look, it's an honor. I would kill for this show. How do we make that work? And they're like, we will wedge it into your life somehow, but we'll do this. And I said, okay, great.
Lots of cocaine, I'm guessing, just keeping you up overnight.
Copious amounts.
Shooting at midnight, just wired.
Yeah, just prop me up. And I'd be like Rocky at round 12, where they're cutting me and just slap me around. And I just, we did. We wedged it into my life. And it was an honor to get it because I like you and like everybody else, I was a fan of the show. It changed my life. It changed TV. When we just did it, it changed television. And we all would go in and watch, you know, Regis in his monochromatic look and the lights and the music and all that stuff. And I'm just,
I remember people's in a bar watching
a game show
the night the guy won the $1 million question,
right?
When he stopping what they're doing, just looking up like it was a sporting event, watching it on the big screen.
And it changed. And we all just were mesmerized because it was, and Michael Davies, who brought it over from Europe, it wasn't a classy show. It was called like Cash Mountain or Money Mountain or something like that. It was this really cheesy show. And his idea was, it's $1 million. Let's make it classy. Like, it should be like velvet rope, red carpet. And that's why the show looked like it did, and the music and the whole thing. And so to walk in and drive that vehicle, it's not lost on me because I'm a big student of the game, and to be able to fill Regis's shoes and to go in. But when I took the show over, they had messed with the format, which they shouldn't have done. The host didn't quite fit the format either, and in Terry Crews and Cedric the Entertainer. And so by the time I got it, she was broken, right? And she was bleeding out. And I didn't realize how bad, but I found out. See, it was, again, this is like the book. You don't realize until you move into a new, you know, forum, which was syndicated TV, daytime TV.
Right.
That's not primetime. I know primetime in and out. I know the ratings in my head from 20 years ago to this morning when I looked at them. I don't know syndicated. I don't know what a good rating is. I don't even know. I don't get that you have different time slots in different cities and different whatever.
How do you gauge success?
Right.
And all that.
So I start reading these like promo lines. Hey, New York, watch Millionaire today at noon on, you know, whatever. So it was, hey, LA, watch Millionaire today at 3:30 a.m. on channel 65. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a while. Next one. Hey, New York, watch Millionaire today at, you know, 3 o'clock. I'm like, that's better. On channel 56. I'm like, 56? What are channels? 56, 65? I've been in New York and LA a lot. Don't remember those stations. And so what you don't realize is, yes, it was on the ABC, air quotes, you know, station. It was on their sister affiliate or their whatever. And it was, yeah, it was these, you know, hey, Detroit, 3:30 a.m. And this is finally when it got to Detroit at like 3:30 a.m. or whatever it was. This is the best. I go, guys, stop, cut. What is happening? Where is the show on the air? They go, don't worry about it, dude. Detroit is like, you know, it's a swing city, you know, and they call them swing cities, whatever, because they have union shops, and those are the swing shifts.
Oh.
So unions, these men and women are getting off work at weird hours, and that's the
swing. They need stuff to watch.
So that's how they were convincing me that this was a good time slot.
You're going to be huge,
yes,
with pipe fitters.
with guys that are on speed trying to stay up at 3 in the morning. And so I was really, you know, disheartened. But one thing I love is I love a challenge, and I love diving into something, and I love people saying that it can't work. And everybody was telling me, you're just a placeholder for a new show that will take over. And they're going to get rid of Millionaire after a year, so enjoy the ride or whatever. And so, I mean, everybody was telling me, and I was like, that's all I need to hear. Great. And so we
thanks for the support.
Yeah. I'm like, that's, I love it. I love nothing more than just giving people the finger by success and by making it. And like, and you can keep your mouth shut. I don't care. I don't need to do a touchdown dance. I am the, you know, the Michael, the Barry Sanders, Walter Payton of the NFL. I'm like, I'll hand the ball to the ref and be like,
act like you've been there before.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a firm believer in that. And I loved it. And that's what Millionaire was for me, is this show was on its deathbed. And with the help of James Rowley, the executive producer, Liz Harris, the co-EP, myself, and another, you know, great team, we kicked ass and we brought the show back. The first year was tough because we had this residual effect from years past as far as contestants we were getting. And and the show, it was hard for them to figure out my speed and my beats for this and what I wanted to bring to the show. And what I wanted was stories. Bring The Bachelor essentially to Millionaire. It's about stories. I don't care what you're doing, as we were talking about with Survivor. It's about storytelling.
Yeah.
Why does Ralph Garman care about this guy on Millionaire? It's my job to make you care.
Why do I want to see him win or lose, depending on how I feel about the guy?
And that's the important thing. I don't need you to like him. That's like, you know, Bachelor, Bachelorette, same way. I don't need you to like my contestants. I need you to care.
Yeah.
Apathy is what kills me. Apathy puts me out of business. That's what puts you out of business. I need you to hate me, love me, tweet about me, whatever. I don't care. I just need you to care.
Right.
And so that's what I do for Millionaire. And in the first year, ratings came up. Next year, you know, sales went out. We got better time slots. We were back on channel 7 in LA and we had a decent time. And then this is our third year. Sales went up. We got back in Canada. Hadn't been in Canada in 16 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
Brought the show back. So now it has been brought around the world now. So the show is really, and now we're, you know, hopefully, you know, knock on wood here, talking about maybe bringing it back to primetime, doing some specials.
Wow.
So the fact that we've not only brought it off its deathbed, But the rate, it's a success now. It's actually making money and doing well. And we've been picked up for a fourth year. And so that is a huge, like, feather in my cap to do that. It's kind of stuff that no one will ever know about, and people outside the business. Not, and look, I don't need you to care. It's like, it's just my own pride.
Right. Chris, I got to say thanks so much for making this happen. I really appreciate it. It's been a blast talking to you. We really hadn't a chance to talk like this.
I know, ever. We do.
And it was fun.
You know, I came in and when you know, back in the days of K Rock or whatever, you know, we would shoot the shit, but it was basically, what are we doing for the show and what are we doing, whatever. And you know, we've never.
That's why I've changed with the Ralph Report, I've sort of changed my style in terms of what interviews are. I like the idea of sitting down and actually talking to somebody for a long period right. of time and talking about their lives. And I think that's more interesting. You know, we're talking about, why should I care about this person? I think it's more interesting than, well, how'd you get into this project, or what can we right. see in tonight's episode? Those quick hits never interested me.
It's funny. You know, this business is funny. And you meet certain people, and you're definitely one of them. You know, over the 16 years is really when it started. When I started The Bachelor, you get, your circle becomes really big. You start meeting all these people. And then, you know, you think that's a good thing. And it is to a certain degree. But then you realize, and then you start, you know, your circle gets smaller and smaller and smaller to people you really care about. Because, you know, you realize most people in this business are scared to death and full of shit. And they're not very talented. So the that's number of true. People that are truly talented in this business are small, like yeah. scary. How small it is. And I see this when I pitch ideas or talk to people, and I look at people across the table and I'm like, you've never produced a frame of television in your life, have you? And I know this because you're talking and the words you're saying, they don't even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you find talented, good people, I hold on to them. I surround myself and, you know, like you and Jimmy Kimmel is a great example of that, of a good guy who's talented. Again, do you love him on TV or hate him? I don't care, but he's just a good man and he's a good guy and he's loyal and yeah. he takes care of his people. And I love what I do. Like, I love my business and I love hosting shows. I love creating television and I hope that comes across. But again, it's more about me. If you can't be happy with yourself and be happy with what you're doing, like, if you're looking for Twitter or Instagram or whatever to validate you, you're in trouble.
Yep.
You know, it's, and so, and I tell that to my kids and on a different level of, you know, if this is where you're going for your validation in life, you're going to be sorely, you know, let down.
I think anytime you look outside of your life or yourself to get validation and to, you know, to feel good about yourself, you're going to be in trouble because invariably those people will let you down at some point.
Because people don't care about you. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but they don't know you. They don't care about you. You know, I love that. You know, one thing I do love is I'm not a character. And people probably run into you in LA and say the same thing, like, oh my God, Ralph. And they feel like they know you.
Right.
Because you've been in my car since I moved to LA. And same thing with me is I've been in these people's homes and their living rooms. So if I'm at a bar at an airport or whatever, and the woman next to me literally starts telling me her sex stories and her sex life and her, like, why her marriage is falling apart or why whatever. And I'm like, wow, she's telling me her innermost secrets. She probably doesn't tell her friends this stuff.
Right.
But she feels like she knows me. I actually love that because I love people and I love talking to people and hearing their stories. People want to be heard and they want to feel like, mm-hmm. So I'm glad that I do feel like people know me to a certain degree. That cuts off at a certain point because I'm pretty private in my private life.
Right.
But it's cool when people can come up to you and be like, hey, like, you're the guy. And it's a good thing. It's a good feeling.
Later on today, of course, I will be sending out the entire Chris Harrison interview as an audio bonus for all you generals, 2 stars and above, as a thank you for your support for the Ralph Report. And as for right now, it's time for something I like to do each and every Friday. I like to check out all the email we get at ralph@theralphreport.com. Speaking of emails, you may notice you got one last night from me asking you to let me know which of the potential The Ralph Report hotlines you like the best. We're trying to get a toll-free number so that you can call in and leave messages for me, and then we can play them on the air. So you can choose from DaGarmy 1-833 DaGarmy, DaGarmy 833 Hi Ralph, which I like a lot, and 1-833-99-GARMY. Those are the 3 choices we've whittled it down to, and we need your help. So we sent that email out last night. If you can, let us know which one you think would be the best number for the Ralph Report hotline, and get back to us at ralph@theralphreport.com. Of course, you can email me about anything. I love to read your emails. I read them all, and we even talk about some of them here on a Friday. I opened up the door and said, if you got an idea for a jingle for the segment, send it all in.
Don Andrews did send one in, and now we've got another one to consider. Mike Serber sent this one in. I like it a lot. It's kind of a spoof on a classic rock song. I dig it.
Don't need no tickets for an aeroplane to find out what's on my listeners' brains. Time to say hello to the folks at home. The Garmy wrote me some letters.
That's from Mike Serber. Thanks so much, Mike. Well done. This first email comes from Jonathan Barnes regarding Marvel and DC movies that have come out. Which one has stood out among the rest as the worst, in your opinion, and why? New to the Garmy, Jonathan Barnes. Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate you joining up with the Garmy, first of all, and for the question. Well, here's the thing. And it's hard for me to say because I grew up a DC kid. I was all Justice League, all Batman, all Superman, all the time. I read Marvel stuff too, but I was absolutely a DC kid. DC has lost the battle so far when it comes to comic book movies. And there have been some real stinkers. And people know of my opinion of The Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, but those really aren't even the worst. When it comes right down to it, it's a battle for me. Green Lantern was supremely disappointing. However, I might have to give the prize to, surprise, surprise, a Marvel-themed movie. It didn't come out of Marvel Studios, however. It came out of 20th Century Fox, their reboot of The Fantastic Four with Miles Teller. I just thought was god-awful. So I think I got to give it to Fantastic Four. Maybe worst isn't the way to name it. Maybe it's most disappointing. Let's put it that way. Because I love The Fantastic Four, and that was awful. It was just awful. Today's email bag definitely has a theme. This next question comes from Dan Alicata. It's another comic book question. He says, I've got two questions for you. Who's your favorite Marvel hero? And do you have a favorite Z-list comic book character? Thanks for the question, Dan. Marvel hero, I got to say, probably not the most popular answer for most people, but Captain America. I've always had a soft spot for Captain America. I always thought he was cool. And sort of unflappable and unwavering in what he stood for and who he was. Always dug that character. And I think Chris Evans does a great job with him in the feature films. And favorite Z-list comic book character? Absolutely. By far, my favorite Z-list comic book character is a lesser member of the Legion of Superheroes from the DC Universe. Matter Eater Lad. Absolutely. Got to be Matter Eater Lad. He is a superhero. If you can't tell from his name, his superpower is he can eat anything. And so it comes in handy. You'd be surprised. If you're stuck in front of a big wall and you need to get through it, Matter Eater Lad can simply just eat through that thing. Danny, thanks for your question, sir. I appreciate it. And before we close out this segment, we got to take a look up Nick Nolte's ass, right? Because I told you that story when I saw Nick Nolte live, and he described how he once helped develop a character for himself by sticking something up his ass. Well, I'll have him tell you. Here you go.
I don't know if I can tell this audience this, but I once built a character in a Tennessee Williams play by putting lead in my shoes, so they were very heavy. And, no, I can't tell this.
Go ahead, tell it.
Well, I took a tight ball and I put it psychologically into a knot in my head, and it made me really tight, kind of mean, and then I had lead shoes. And then I can't tell you what I put up my ass. But it was a secret. Nobody knew. The audience didn't know I'd done that.
I can't tell you what I put up my ass. So we've been playing a game here called What's Up Nick Nolte's Ass. And Steve Barden, legendary music composer for television and film, Steve Barden, who, by the way, wrote the original music for the Showbiz Beat. Thank you, Steve. I didn't get a chance to thank you publicly for that, but thanks so much for sending that in. He has also contributed a little jingle for this new segment that's just kind of popped out of Nick Nolte's ass.
What's up, what's up? What's up, what's up? Nick Nolte's ass.
Thank you, Steve Barden. And this week, What's Up Nick Nolte's Ass comes from Maggie in Everett, Washington. And Maggie says, What's Up Nick Nolte's Ass is an autographed picture of Barbra Streisand. Well, it makes sense because they worked together. One of his most famous roles was in Prince of Tides. So that's What's Up His Ass this week. Thanks so much for spending a piece of your Friday with me. I truly appreciate it. Thanks for the whole week. It's been great. Thanks to Chris Harrison, of course, for being with me all week long. And thanks to Steve Ashton, our UK correspondent, Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports, and those Garmy members like Leah and Banks who pitched in and helped me put the show together this week. I truly appreciate it. As I mentioned, Monday, I'm taking it off. I'm going to spend the long weekend with my wife and my kid. I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new Ralph Report. I will talk to you then. I love you. I mean it. Bye.